When I flew to England to my recruiting trip 4 or 5 months ago, I was on the plane with a wealthy lady from Tel Aviv. Very, very wealthy. I think she had a house in England and a house in France and a house in America and a house in Israel. Very wealthy Israeli business couple. You know, one that's, maybe I'm exaggerating. She had 2 or 3 houses. I think 2 in Israel and 1 in France. And she was, her husband was spending a month in England doing business, and she was flying up 3 or 4 times during that month to go visit him. Which again is just indicative of, like, you know, how well they're doing. The house is more so than the place. And she was talking about the culture of Tel Aviv, and she loves, once in a while, her husband fly to New York to go to a Broadway show, and then fly back, you know, the next morning. You know, when I walk by Broadway, I don't have enough interest to go walk in and let you know, but okay. She was telling me I should go listen to this. She said, you know, you have to go see the Israeli Philharmonic. I told him that's so much into, like, plays and stuff like that. I also can't imagine heavy singing, you know, Im Hayiti Ashir, you know what I mean? Like, if I were a rich man, that's a song in English, you know, tradition. You can't sing the song, you gotta be tradition. Like, I don't know exactly what it would be in Hebrew. I also believe the reason why she told me to see that Philharmonic is because it's her real attachment to religion. You know what I'm saying? She doesn't know much about religion at all. Knew very little about religion, but you know, she knew she started to play about religious Jews, and here's a guy wearing a kippah talking to her, so like, you know, there's her connection, you know? Once in a while you bump into a Jew, but very little about nothing. Like, I went to Hebrew school, and you're like, what am I, your Mora, you want a star? You know what I mean? But on the other hand, like, you smile and say, that's fantastic, good for you, I'm really proud. Because, you know, they expect, you know, you to be some half Chabadnik, you know, moral example. And the truth is, that's a good thing. Good thing we have, it's a good thing. There are many good parts about having a dual standard, double standard. There are many good things about it. We have the responsibility to live up to our name. In any event, so we're talking about filler on the roof. And I was telling her, you know, I really like the ideology, the hashkafa of filler on the roof. I think it's a very profound point. I think it's as follows. The more you stick to tradition, the more you do things you don't understand. Sometimes even silly things. The more you deviate from tradition, the less from you become. That's I think the point of the movie. He starts off talking about how without our tradition we'd be a shaky ass, look up, a fiddler on the roof. And that's like the whole point of these things, tradition. And everyone has their job and everyone does the same thing. They fight over a goat or with a horse or with a whatever, a mule, it was a horse, and the same old things over and over again, with the exact same thing. He goes, I'll tell you why under our cloth we wear these garments, for instance. The reason is because I don't know. And that's like part of the joke, because he's like, you know, telling you everything about it, and he has no idea, none of us know everything. We do it, this is what we do, it's our tradition. We do it because it's our tradition, it keeps us living, it keeps us going. I do know it's silly. That's like really the first part of the movie. Then eventually, the movie progresses. One of the traditions you find out is the matchmaker, and all these girls are romantically dreaming about the perfect, most wonderful match, making the perfect match, and turns out the oldest daughter gets some 60-year-old butcher who's maybe been divorced or something like that, and he's really not a good catch. And she says, listen, Dad, I know that the tradition is to marry whoever they give you, but it doesn't make any sense. I don't want it. It'll make me miserable. And have you had to figure out how to help his wife to break tradition, and he comes up with a dream, and first one decides, okay, after, you know, I don't have to marry with the matchmaker. The second one realizes the matchmaker tradition is out the window. Says, well, I don't even want to go to the matchmaker in the first place. But the first one went, when it worked out bad, they broke the tradition. The second one says, I'm marrying this guy. And she says, I want your blessing. He goes, well, you have my permission. And we're not asking permission, we want your blessing. He goes, well, you have them both. And he realizes he's losing them. And then the third one, the more they develop that tradition, the more he marries a guy. So that's really the point of the movie. On one hand, if we stick around marrying people you don't like, that's not good. On the other hand, if you break from tradition, you know, so you end up marrying a guy. I think that's the point of the play, the tension. I don't think it's as black and white as the play slash movie portrays it, but I do think the tension is correct, which is the more you remain in the ghetto, the more you remain blindly traditional, the firmer you remain. But on the other hand, sometimes more difficult it is to enjoy life, the shorter, the less profundity you have to take and give from the world. Now, thinking in a certain sense, sometimes we put ourselves, we set these silly traditional things, you know, thing. I was reading on the internet, the guy who writes, you know, about the Shidduch world, the difficulties of the Shidduch world, and there's a lot of crazy things we have in Shidduch. He tells a story about me, that 31 years old looking for Shidduch. He wanted that. 31, like, you know, I'm still getting married. And some guys are getting married. He writes, he's got to set up this girl, and the girl says she wants him to meet, you know, his rub first, her rub first. And if he passes the rub test, then he can meet the girl. He says, like, you know, like, why do you meet the rub first? The rub explains, you know, to the guy, listen, she doesn't want to, you know, it's a big waste of time for her to meet you, it's not shy. The guy says, I feel bad, but isn't it a big waste of your time to meet me if it's not shy? It's one extra unnecessary step. Let me meet the girl. If it's not shy, she'll tell me. And it's like such a great point. You know, the whole craziness that you have to meet this one to that one, and people only dating people with, you know, who have white tablecloths, and silly things we build up for ourselves, silly things that just enable people to be condescending and look down upon each other, you know, to be firmer than that. It's bad. So much of silly tradition creates Nabal Gushim HaTorah. It really does. It creates, you know, and one of the reasons why I think the Haredim is the beauty of the Medina, the beauty of Zion, is because they're overly traditionalistic. The traditionalism is overly strong. We didn't have Medina in the 1800s. Why do we need it now? We have Gemara then, we have Gemara now. Life should be the same. Let's try our best to idealize the days we were butchered and murdered in bloody streets, bloody streets in Eastern Europe. Let's try to go back to those days. On the other hand, once you start becoming open-minded, you know, to the point where your brain falls out, it becomes unhealthy as well. Like you find sometimes in the more liberal community, you know, smarter than the Masorah, smarter than tradition, you know, Chazal are wrong here and Chazal are wrong there. I listen to a shir on the internet. Not the internet, my iPad. But, you know, I commute back and forth to work. I'm a commuter, so I listen to the iPad and listen to the shir. It was so refreshing to hear this guy, a real academic scholar who knows the material, knows history, knows the writings, knows the academic side, knows the Christian side, knows everything. And he was defending the Jewish traditional beliefs. And it's like so refreshing because sometimes I'm exposed to, you know, well, Chazal say the following, they're probably wrong, but nonetheless their message is correct. I'm saying, like, right away the assumption is that historians are correct and Chazal are wrong. And it could be that's really true, I don't know. And each case is really different. But it was so refreshing to not start off right away that Chazal were wrong, that Chazal didn't understand history, didn't understand science. It could be they didn't understand these things. I don't know. But the assumption that starts off is that we know better than Chazal. We have a more enlightened perspective. You know, okay, we're shackled by the, you know, the halakhic necessity of traditionalism, the halakhic, you know, the ideological necessity or the religious necessity to remain with you know, the old-time tradition, the old-time halakha. But at the end of the day, we should just really, everyone knows deep down we should renovate it, we should update it. I was talking to someone over Pesach, and he said, he goes, come on, you know, we should just get rid of the Chinese Shalgullians. If you have a business, and you make a bad business deal, don't just stick with it because it's tradition. Out with the old, and in with the new, let's get rid of the Chinese Shalgullians, and while we're at it, Kinyo. And the Kinyo is the question, really is a good question. Significantly better than the unchanged Shalgullians, which is the favorite Gemara that they should keep it. And it's not a mistake, it's a minhag. But leaving beside that distinction between Kinyo and the Shalgullians, no appreciation of the Masorah, no appreciation of where we came from. And it's so unbelievably important, because at the end of the day, once you start the short changing halakha, there's no reason why you should keep any of it. Once we have enough power to dismiss any halakha, we're stripping out of its divinity. There's a certain sense of traditionalism and remaining firm and respecting mainstream Judaism, mainstream Masorah, what our fathers had to say. I listened to a different show on the internet, and he was talking about how in the more modern Israeli culture, the Pshat world, the people like you, or the academic world in Israel, they start fresh. The way you learn is you open up a chumash that no one ever saw. And that's Givaldi. It creates all sorts of creative new ideas and creative new thoughts and interpretations of Sukkim. A whole other world of partially being developed every day these days. It's unbelievably great, super intelligent, brilliant answers to major questions that were never really addressed and sometimes never addressed properly. But this particular scholar, you know, who's giving shir, was talking about how it's important not to dismiss thousands of years beforehand. talk about the gadlus of the Ramban and talk about the gadlus of the Rashbam, even if you think that there are questions they didn't address, and they didn't address all the questions, then it shouldn't be, you know, this divorce is disconnected from the Torah. You know, the Mashal Pirkei Avos has a great Mashal. Talks about a person But Pirkei Avos is a Mashal about a tree. The roots are really deep. You know, won't blow over in the wind, and the leaves are really, you know, wonderful. So they look beautiful, but will blow over. The Mishnah connects it to Meisim versus Chacham. I was thinking Meisim create deep. Is roots, the sense of traditional, the sense of fakeite. The more you act in a traditional, firm way, the more it becomes part of you. The trees, the leaves are thought. And the beauty of this mashal is twofold. Level number one is at the end of the day, we value beautiful leaves. But if you only have beautiful leaves and not strong roots of low oak, all the most sophisticated, open-minded, profound thought in the world without deep roots is not going to last you in the long term. And on the other hand, if you have deep roots, you'll live all your life, but if you have an ugly tree, no one wants to look at it either. Again, if you had to choose, I would choose from an unsophisticated, opposed to sophisticated and not from. But the point of the mission is that you don't have to make that choice. And point number two, which is, I think, even sharper, is that how much can one grow their leaves and fruits and flowers to make the tree look beautiful? The answer is, it corresponds to how deep the roots are. It's proportionate. The more you want to develop in chachma, the more you want to develop in breadth, the more you want to develop in sophistication, the more you want to get educated, the more you want to leave, quote unquote, the ghetto, although most of us have already left it, the more you want to embrace the world, give and take from the world, and hear their ideas, be involved in intellectual, questioning and searching, the deeper roots, the more deep and more large and more, deeper the roots need to be planted. If you don't want to question that much about the world, you don't need that deep roots. Because proportionately to how well the tree, how likely the tree is to grow, blow over, is how likely the tree to grow depends upon not just how big and how, the surface area of the leaves, but the strength and depth of the roots as well. It's a portion of the thing. It's not just, well, if I get a little bit of this, a little bit of that, it's fine. Or in fact, if I get a lot of, if you have a lot of leaves with a little bit of roots, that is a lot more dangerous than a little bit of leaves with a little bit of roots. And the point is, the more leaves you have, the more roots you need. Needless to say, the more beautiful tree is the one that has both. The more dangerous tree is the one that has only leaves. The safer, yet ugly, shallow tree is the one with only roots. Again, needless to say with the goal, but that's point number one. Point number two is to realize the proportionate thing. To maintain and strengthen a sense of traditionalism. Not for sure getting rid of the silly things like the Shidduchim thing. People who are overly machmir and sneeze hurt their chances of getting married, hurt their sense of bein adam l'chaveiro, hurt their sense of allowing people to feel free that they can meet people and interact with people on their own. On the other hand, a real sense of awe of Yiras Shamayim towards the Mesorah, Esav L'Rabba Tamid HaChamim, it's Es Hashem Tira, it's not just the fear of God. Yiras Shamayim is not only about the recognition of that a first brought from your presence, it's not just the perspective that I realize first brought from, but a sense of traditional, a sense of awe and fear and appreciation, respect for the Mesorah, for the Rabbanim, for the whole, for the religion as a whole. And I guess the message is, thinking about this Mishnah, I think that's a Tiddler on the Roof message, that I wanted to, again, to reiterate the message that we've discussed several times, to develop things, to broaden yourself, to be involved in intellectual pursuit. And on the other hand, in the traditional, from context, one that has roots and ensures a religious future for yourself and for your family, it's 100% legitimate to shy away from marrying, to put some bad shit up the matchmaker game. And even these days, it's totally legitimate to find your own, not just rely on the matchmaker. But be careful if it doesn't lead into assimilation, be careful if it leads into intermarriage, be careful It's a slippery slope. The further you move from tradition, the slipperier it is. It requires, when you move out, keep one foot in and one foot out. It's not really balanced. And I don't know if it's the right balance for everyone. Each person's different. Each person's different. It's not having goals about tradition. Everyone should have a good Shabbos.